Hello and welcome to the Roundhouse Podcast with Paul Sollentrop of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. Our guest is volleyball coach Chris Lamb. He will wrap up spring practices for us. Chris is entering his 24th season at Wichita State in the fall of 2023. Chris, have you started thinking about your all 25-year team? You know I'm going to ask you about that as we get closer to that.
I don't think it's so much as if I had to put a team together as just some of the impact players and people over the years that I thought were just so important to their teams for different reasons. I think about that a lot. Every now and then we'll get into a conversation with other coaches. You know, what would your starting lineup be if you could bring everybody out in their prime? And that's fun to do. I can imagine that we could probably have fun with that conversation.
25 years of Lambeau, that would be an interesting thing to think about. I guess Kelly Broussard at Libero would be my only thing that I would feel strongly about just because I enjoyed watching her playing so much. There may have been better ones, but she would one I really enjoyed. All right, let's talk about the Shockers. They played in the NIVC last season, finished with an 18-13 record, just to remind people, 13-6 in the American Athletic Conference. Middle Natalie Foster and left Briley Kelly earned all conference honors. Right side Sophia Rowling was on the second team. So last season, let's bring people up to date, refresh their memories. You beat Iowa State. That was a big deal. You finished really strong, winning 7 of the final 8 in the regular season. A win at SMU, though, would be among the highlights. What was your takeaway from last fall that led you into spring practices?
Well, I feel like if I don't say this out loud, it gets a little lost. But I never really look at our overall record. I clearly schedule tougher than most. What I say for a very calculated reason. We have this thing called RPI. It's the most important piece to that. The most important piece of that formula is your non-conference schedule. I mean, I was arguing with some college coaches recently in a conference call. I mean, you're trying to make apple pie without apples to do it any other way. I mean, if the apple pie is RPI, well, the main ingredient is non-conference schedule. So you're benefited by playing good teams win or lose. So go play them. And people that chase 20-win seasons, I hope you get there, but not at the expense of not having apples in your apple pie. It doesn't make any sense. So, a record a little better than 500 is very possible in doing this. And that might even be a losing non-con record and then hopefully, you know, doing a good job in conference. That's very possible. So if you're able to do a good job in conference and come out ahead above 500 with a good apple-filled non-conference schedule, then you've done a lot. But people who just look at records would never see that. I pay attention to that. I pay attention to strength of schedule and result, not just record. So when people set a predetermined number for, hey, we want to win this many games, and you don't really look at who those opponents were, you're really missing the point. You're missing a lot. So, you know, I hear you say 18-13, and I think that might just seem to be average to a lot of people. But when you consider who those games were against, and you consider that we've been trying to save money around here since COVID, so we're not flying on airplanes to go around and get the best apples in our schedule, I think we've done a heck of a job, me and my staff, building the schedule we've made the last couple of years. I mean, just look at our non-con winning percentage, the teams we play and how they've done. Most bubble teams, you go look at that number is about 52%, 53%, 54%. Well, so they're all in the bubble and they're all hovering around the bubble, but the teams that go out and play a better non-con, that's the gift that keeps on giving. So throughout the year, their RPIs are going up because their non-con teams, non-conference matches, are against teams that are doing a good job and they're winning. So then that pays dividends to your RPI. So, you know, you mentioned our record, and that's because you're just doing what everybody does. What you should be saying is, you know, we were 58 in the RPI. That's what I want to hear, because that's the apples. The conference schedule, the overall record is really secondary to what really matters. So I will throw that out there. It's one thing to say 18 and 13 last year. It's an entirely other thing to say that we had a really high RPI.
So over the years, you've been able to bring in really good non-conference opponents to Wichita. I can think back to Washington, Michigan State, Kentucky, BYU, Creighton, on and on. How has scheduling changed, Hawaii? How has scheduling changed in your time here?
Just needing, we're going to have to start having guarantees now with everybody throwing money around. You know, we give people 10 rooms for three nights when other schools will give them 10 rooms for three nights and $5,000. But the key is getting another good team. Once I get a Texas here or a Tennessee and a Colorado State, then I get Texas. When I got Creighton and South Dakota, both 20-game winners, then I got Hawaii. We're the only school to get Hawaii off the island for a non-con in 20 years. But I proved to them that it was a good RPI tournament. Well, the three of us would win 20-plus games, and it would help them with seeding come RPI seeding time at the end of the year, and it did. So the number one thing is to get a really good team on the books. So you do that by going to their place and hopefully getting a return when you're negotiating your schedule in the future. So, you know, this year we got Kansas coming on a return. Well, that got us Colorado. Now, we lost Santa Clara. We're still hoping for a third team. We might not get it. But, you know, on that weekend, Wichita State, Kansas, and Colorado are all going to be here. You know, good luck finding other mid-majors like us with that same kind of firepower at a home tournament. You know, and most of the teams schedule home tournaments. They go out and they try to schedule a 2-1 record or a 3-0 record. I don't really care about it. The important part is that they're here and that they're on our schedule. If we can beat them, great. But like I said, the dividends are coming from, hey, we're bringing good teams to our fans. We get to have home games against real opponents. When I say real, I mean heavyweights. And then down the road, it should pay off with, you know, if they go out and have good seasons at a high level, it should help us with our RPI.
Do recruits want to play against that type of schedule?
If they're competitors, they do. You know, we sell that all the time in recruiting. Like, we don't run and hide in scheduling. I mean, the worst opponent, I hate saying it out loud, the worst opponent we've had in a non-con in years was Holy Cross at Penn State. But Hofstra was winning 20 games. Penn State was a top 10 team. And Penn State gave me a return. Bad news is they haven't done it yet. We haven't gotten them back here. They had a coaching change. But that's a lot. I'm getting Penn State, a top 10 program, to come play Wichita State eventually. But at the end, they lost a team, I forget who, and added Holy Cross. I would never have put a 5-20 team on our schedule. We got the win, of course, but like I said, that's actually hurting us, not helping us. But, you know, that's what we ended up getting. We'd already agreed to the tournament. The tournament changed. Those things happen. But, you know, we got a win against a very good Hofstra team, and we hopefully in the near future we'll have Penn State here, a top 10 program that will attract another amazing team, and we'll get to bring that to Wichita.
So back to last December, season's over. What's tops on your priority list as you start thinking about what you want to accomplish in the spring?
You're talking about what I wanted to accomplish
last
spring?
Yes, if you were to take us back to December and you were making your plans for the spring schedule, spring practices.
Okay, so last year, pretty hard not to go here first. You know, we were super young when COVID hit, when everybody started getting an extra year. Around the NCAA, around college athletics. And at the same time, this new variable, fun new variable, enters the equation called the transfer portal. Well, we weren't really a part of the portal in any December when so many volleyball players are transient, coming and going. So this year, we had an opportunity to be in the transfer portal. And we were aggressive, and I think we changed our roster for the better. I say that because in our own backyard, just watching other schools in our area and evaluating my thoughts on how the transfer portal has affected those programs, I guess I could say this out loud, but, you know, kids that left K-State were better than the kids they got. Kids that left Missouri were a lot better than the kids they got. Kids that left Oklahoma were better than the ones they got. I think those three programs in our backyard were in deficit in the transfer portal. However, I think Kansas got better. I think Creighton got better. And I think Nebraska got better. So I'm saying, well, this transfer portal thing in our backyard seems to be 50-50. Let's take our chances at it and see how we do. Well, in our first effort this last December, I'm pretty positive that our roster has upgraded. With Casey Litzau having hurt her foot and was going to miss the spring to basically rehab a foot injury, we knew we needed to track down another center and did. And I think Izzy Strand has been terrific. Really, really good. I think I'm not exactly sure when and where everybody will be, but I think Shocker fans will see some new faces in the fall, and they will say, well, where did that girl come from? Well, she came from the transfer portal. It's kind of the new normal. We've seen it around here in basketball. But the volleyball fans will see it for the first time, and Barbara Kohler's a great athlete. I think she's going to help our program right away. A couple of the girls I think are going to help in time. Gabby Moss, most likely be our starting libero as we set sail in August. And a few others, I think their time will come. They're young. Maddie Wilson, Brooklyn Leggett, for sure, will have their time. We may look to redshirt Madison because we can. But she also could be a starter in a position or two. So we've got options. So the spring brought us some new athletes, and the spring went really well because our roster was large enough. We were able to enter these spring competitions as two different teams. And while it's spring, and you can't draw too many conclusions from spring, I'll tell you that when we split our team in half at the Kansas City tournament, well, one of those teams split with UMKC, beat Rockhurst, and then beat Arkansas and Northern Iowa. The other team beat Missouri, Arkansas, Northern Iowa, and Tulsa. And those were two Shocker teams that were split in half. So not every team is at full strength in the spring. I get that. But I know what I'm looking at on the other side of the net. I know who I'm seeing. And it was pretty refreshing to make you feel good about your methods when you are stacking up against teams and competing with them, let alone coming away with a victory. And, you know, we finished at Nebraska. And we lost 20-20-21, I believe, without really preparing for a team. And they didn't either. I mean, let's be honest. But, you know, it's just my observation with how physical, because they were a Final Four team last year, and they're better now than they were then. So I thought that was a nice way to put a bow on our spring, to go up there and really compete well against what I think will be a preseason top five or better team in Nebraska Huskers.
Let me run through these newcomers to catch people up. You mentioned Barbara Kohler.
Yeah.
Junior college transfer from Florida Southwestern. Brooklyn Leggett is an outside hitter from Colorado Mesa, NCAA Division II school. Maddie Wilson is a middle from Idaho, transfer from Idaho. Izzy Strand, you mentioned, the setter. She is a transfer from UC San Diego. And Gabby Moss, libero, DS, transfer from TCU. And Megan Riley, an outside from Arizona State. So you've had semester additions before. Mary Elizabeth Hooper may be the most prominent of them. When you have this many, how do you go about, you know, structuring things, integrating all those new people?
Well, I trust my instincts. I walk in the gym, I see what I got. My staff and I, while we're pretty fluid, pretty nimble, we do have sort of a philosophy for the spring. This spring's philosophy had more to do with point scoring. We've got a few Shockers. As good as we did last year, as well as we did last year, the Shockers still need to score more and more spots. Kill percentage. I'm talking about kill percentage. We played clean. We played good defense. Serve and pass certainly got better as we went along. But I'm looking at my team saying, the difference between us and SMU and Houston and UCF is firepower. And you're talking recruiting. You're talking about just more physical players at these schools. So firepower is on their side. But to beat them, if they're getting 17, 18 points a game, you got to get close. And you're going to block two a game. You're going to get an ace and a half a game. You know, so there's 3.5 points that are probably going to be there, but the rest are going to come from kills. So where are your 13, where are your 14, 15 kills going to come from, right, with five attackers? Well, so that averages out to be three a game. Well, all right, who's going to get three a game? You know, I mean, you got a setter that can get you one. Now you got five attackers. Well, Briley last year got over four. Sophia was 3.5. But, you know, so many others were in the twos. Frosty could get up there if we could keep her busy. But the Shockers need to improve kill percentage. And then what we call the M1 position. If we're in a 5-1 offense, the middle next to the setter in volleyball is called the M1 position. Natalie Foster played that for us last year. But that's not her lane. She's good at it, first team all conference, but she's great in the two spot. And we felt if we could make M1 better without it being Natalie Foster, that might be as good as of anything we can do, but it requires work, training. So basically you're saying, let's get Maddie Wilson up to speed. Let's get Morgan Stout up to speed. Let's get Lauren McMahon up. Let's just train the heck out of this thing. And in doing so, we also made Natalie Foster better at that job. But we made a huge commitment to preparing that piece. And along the way, it also helps you defend it. So we played a lot of scenarios involving growth at that position. That was job number one of our spring, and it paid off.
Explain the difference between M1 and M2.
Okay, so if you're in a 5-1 offense, you got one setter, not two. So when the setter gets to the front row, she's a setter, and you have two hitters. When they're in the back row, she's in the back row, so you have three hitters. So 99% of the volleyball teams in America will have that setter be at right front, 99.9. And so now you've got a middle blocker / middle attacker and an outside hitter. And if you're lucky, you've got a back row attacker. But it's two hitters. So people, if the M1, the person who is in the front row with the setter, two rotations, it's the girl that's called the M1. And one rotation, that girl's in the back row, and it's the other middle that's up in the front row with the setter, labeled as the M2, but now playing in the M1 role as a front row middle. The front row middle routes are usually a little different than the M2s, because the M2s have a right side player next to them, so they pretty much stay in the middle, where the M1s run middle and right. So they run all over the place. I'm just being very, very vague. I'm just kind of just sort of spitballing this here, suitcase terms, so to speak. But the idea of identifying where the pass is, where the dig, and can you choose a good route, get to it, and can your setter and you connect with power? That's one thing to set them. That's another thing to swing with power. So it's been a job of ours, a responsibility of ours to get that upgraded, improve it. And, you know, you recruit for it, but you certainly hope you can find it, because there's not a lot of them out there. You know, I follow NFL football a lot, and I'm obsessed with the NFL draft. And you hear all the time, these guys say, walk into a bar, there's a whole bunch of guys standing in a bar that look like defensive backs, you know, and linebackers. But how many people look like an NFL offensive lineman? There's only so many on the planet. You better get a few. Well, the M1 role requires, you know, jumping ability, like triple jumpers. I mean, they're running and they're going lateral and they're flying all over the place. And they got to be quick decision makers, because they got to identify a dig and then find somewhere to go. If you want to be good at it, you can just roll out the dice and say, hey, just play straight up. But if you really want to make an impact there, it's going to require some talent and some skill and a lot of work. And Abby Lehman was great there. Underrated. You named some. You asked earlier about, you know, great Shockers. One of the most underrated Shockers is Sarah McGee for not being very physically talented. She was brilliant with her decision making and brilliant with her hand on the ball contact. I mean, she got the most out of her talent at that position, and three-time all-conference player, first-teamer, as a walk-on. I mean, it's proud of Sarah McGee. That story means a lot, and I'm real proud of that. So you got to develop it, and if you want to really be impactful there. So I know I've said a lot on that, to answer that question, but, you know, Morgan Stout is the kind of athlete that she can go as far in volleyball as she wants to. She's a gifted volleyball talent. And I'll tell you what, Shocker fans will be happy to see what Madison Wilson brings to the table in that role. And she's sort of built for it, the way she runs and jumps and swings. And so, you know, if we're able to redshirt Maddie this year with three more years to go, we probably feel pretty comfortable that we have an M1 in the top third of our league for years to come, and that's important.
So take us through the setter position now. You mentioned Izzy Strand. Casey Litzau is transferring to the University of Washington. How's that position look at the end of the spring?
Well, I always like having three setters in the gym, and this is a bit of a – it hurts to imagine that, you know, I'm never going to see Casey Litzau on senior night. But, you know, the transfer portal and – all these kids getting that fifth year. I mean, you got kids going all over the place to play one season of volleyball everywhere, coming and going. So it's, you know, for all of us older fans and coaches, we just got to get used to it. She was, you know, not so sure she'd be starting for us next year. I told her I couldn't promise her that. I don't promise anybody starting positions. But, you know, was given an opportunity at Washington where, heck, they're going to pay for her to get a master's degree. They're going to pay for her fall, spring. I mean, I don't know how people are doing that, but that's change. If that's the new normal, wow, look out that people can offer that kind of academic money down the road. We keep thinking that NLI is the next, you know, playground to play on. Well, don't forget about things like this. If this is what's going on, and she had that opportunity, I think, with Creighton and San Jose State also in her recruiting process. So I've got to dig in and find out a little bit more about that, because kind of caught me off guard. I don't have the ability as a coach to sit there and tell people where academic money could come from for them, at least beyond the spring semester. So, you know, these athletes are finding themselves some pretty nice situations that, you know, they might not be able to get at home. So that's changing in recruiting also. But excited for her, and she came into the office and you know, told us what her thoughts were, and we support her on it. But we certainly now are in the market to try to still get another setter in the gym, and we're still working at that.
So you've got Izzy Strand, the transfer, and you've got
Lauren Wheeler.
Returner Lauren Wheeler. Tell us about Izzy. When I saw her at the Kansas State scrimmage, drop in practices every once in a while, she looks the part, is what kept popping into my brain.
Yeah, I mean, she's fun in the gym. She's got good, silly energy. Kind of reminds me of Andy Hartig that way. There's kind of a silliness to her that once you get it, it kind of keeps things going. Andy Hartig was the best at that. Izzy's got a lot of talent. I mean, I'd liken her to Chelsea Feakin in this regard. And Feakin was terrific, obviously, one of the best ever. But Feakin didn't have great feet, but her hands made up for what her feet didn't do for her. Izzy's got amazing hands. She can fling this thing from all over the place. Even though she's not really there with her feet and body, just extremely strong in the arms and the elbows and the wrists, and good with long balls. So not that she can just chuck it out there. She's accurate and consistent with her rhythm, tempo, as we say in volleyball. So I can just imagine that Sophia Rowling's attempts are going to go up because Izzy can find her from more places, and it's a consistent ball that, that Sophia, with physical advantage, can go up and get. Also, in volleyball, there's sort of a set to the middles away from the setter called a 3 or a 31, a different shoot set. I mean, different coaches will have different titles, but it's still a long set. And a lot of people don't encourage that because the longer the ball's in the air, the easier it is for blockers to get to it. So, you either love it or you hate it. Well, it's unbelievable to me the success that Izzy has with this long three set, long three gap set, as we call here. On paper, you're like, maybe bad decision. Well, it was a kill. That was a bad decision. That was another kill. So, you find stuff like that, too. You play to your athlete's strengths, and she's good at it. Her and Maddie Wilson, if Maddie finds herself onto the floor, I'll tell you what, the way those two comfortably hook up with that route, you imagine quarterbacks and receivers, and there's just some routes that just, it's coming, and you can't stop it. I have a little bit of that feeling going on. With Lauren McMahon in that set, and with Maddie Wilson, with Izzy, they're very good at it. It's something that just sticks out to me.
Lauren Wheeler redshirted as a freshman last fall. How did she progress?
Yeah, so Shocker fans might remember Haley Pluggy. Well, Haley Pluggy did transfer at semester because Casey Litzau decided to come back for her fifth year, and Haley just wanted to play. So she transferred back to Cali, and she's going to Sac State. So when Haley left, that's why we felt we ought to recruit another setter, and that's where Izzy Strand came from. But when Lauren Wheeler got here in the summer and the girls were playing open gyms, we had Shocker volleyball players coming to my office telling me that they thought Lauren Wheeler would start over Casey and Haley. And right off the bat, to me it was Casey's job all the way, and she never looked back. But right off the bat, I thought, man, Wheeler's going to pass Haley here. I think that lasted a couple of weeks, and then I think Haley kicked it into gear, and the college routine and the college grind also catches up to a lot of freshmen, and I think Lauren Wheeler had to learn how to ride that wave. But when I said earlier that we'd split our team into two teams, Lauren Wheeler was on the other side of that from Arkansas, bringing home a win. Lauren Wheeler was on the other side of the net from Northern Iowa.
Hi, this is Rick Neuma, president of Wichita State University. Check out the latest episode of the Forward Together podcast. Each episode, I sit down with different guests from Shocker Nation to celebrate the vision and mission of Wichita State University. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
I asked her in her year-end meeting what her greatest accomplishment was as an athlete / volleyball player. And she started pointing to some high school matches and some club matches. I said, I know we've left the Missouri Valley, but you're talking to a man that has great respect for my Northern Iowa Panthers. And I go, I don't know what you know about Northern Iowa, but I know how I feel about Northern Iowa. And I go, Lauren, I watched you and your team beat what I believe is a starting lineup for Northern Iowa, outside of maybe a freshman or two walking in the door. But I go, those things matter to me. You were on the floor during a win. It's one thing to be a starter on a college team. Another thing to be a starter on a college team that can win, right? I pay attention to these stuff like that. And for me as an evaluator, for me as having the great honor and responsibility to be Lauren's coach and all these young women's coach, I as an evaluator, which I bring my evaluation hat to practice every single day, I'm going, okay, look what you just did. You need to consider that a step up the ladder. And I don't even know if she noticed it that way. But that's a good thing because You know, has he got bonked on the head this year and missed some practice with an apparent concussion? I mean, we got the protocols now. You know, it's okay, Lauren, because Casey was out with her foot. Lauren, it's on you now. Are you ready? And a lot of people, a lot of programs in college would take a step back when, you know, softball, when the other pitcher has to pitch, or in volleyball, when the other setter, the younger setter, has to take over. So, yeah, it matters that you can improve at that, in that role, and I hope that she feels good about it. She also probably is in the best shape of her life now. It's every volleyball player's responsibility to be in their best shape of their life each spring, because we have nothing else really to do but get in tip-top shape and hold on to as much of that as you can through the summer coming into the fall. And the fall is just attrition. It's a weathering down of our bodies from August to December. So you do the best you can. Well, I think Lauren got as serious about her body and getting herself ready and created some good habits for herself. So she should come in August ready to fight, ready to go.
So the description I kept hearing during spring practices was the gym got deeper, the gym got more competitive, talking about using gym as a term for the roster, the practice sessions. Describe that. What did that look like on a day-to-day basis for the coaches?
So, I mean, not just legitimate scrimmages, but moving kids around and having it in almost any configuration, having it be very competitive. So people playing on different sides of the net of each other, not keeping a single lineup together for very long. I mean, literally development on the brain, more so than fine-tuning a lineup. And, you know, you'd have to walk into the gym and decide for yourself who our starters were. I mean, you might know because you know soccer, volleyball, you know who the usual suspects are. But, you know, you could walk in on any given day and go, well, maybe that girl's a starter. Maybe that girl's a starter. I mean, you watch my libero squad right now, and you tell me who the best one is, because on any given day, it's three or four of them are right in it. I mean, that group has been terrific, you know, and that's what I want to see. And you know, everybody knows Sophia on the right, and there is a difference there. She's a physical gifted talent, but statistically, Brooklyn Leggett's not far behind. On paper, you might not notice her in a gym, but on paper, wow, she might be the heir apparent to the great Sophie Rowling. And wouldn't that be nice? Because, you know, everybody, you know, even Babe Ruth got replaced in right field by somebody. And it's not every year you can go, well, Joe Montana out, Steve Young in. I mean, good luck with that. Brett Favre out, Aaron Rodgers in. I mean, we all try. But, you know, I'm sitting here looking at, you know, it's going to be a lot saying goodbye to Sophia. A lot. But what if Brooklyn or Maddie Wilson, who I also think could play on the right, was to go over there and the numbers were close? That'd be an incredible transition, and I think it's possible.
Tell us more about the libero position. We talked about Gabby Moss, the transfer from TCU, a little bit. How's that group play out?
I am as proud of them. I have no problem saying this. I don't mean it good or bad or indifferent. I'm so proud of Kylie and Annalie. You know, Gabby comes in here walking in the door with just another level of sort of experience. When I say that, I don't just mean, oh, well, she came from TCU. Gabby was playing on a really good club team that was, you know, playing in the open division. Katie Galligan got some of that with her club team. Annalie didn't play at the highest level. Kylie didn't play at the highest level. but to see how far Annalie and Kylie and Katie have come. Because when Gabby got here, I mean, you could just see she's seen this before. She was ready, seasoned. But these girls just got better, Paul. We played a lot this spring, so it wasn't so much just individual type drills where we're just working on a skill, digging for a long time or passing or just a lot of technical work. We do that. We get a lot of that at times. We didn't, as I said earlier, we had a different philosophy, a different a recipe, I guess, for this spring. So it did involve them being busy at their position in terms of training. It involved them being busy at their position in terms of reading skills and taking over the serve reception game, like literally being an alpha back there as we receive serve. and personality. I, if that's not the right word, if there's a better word, but I wanted an impact from them in a leadership role, regardless of their hierarchy and status amongst players. I wanted the liberos to be easily recognized and heard by everybody. I wanted charismatic leadership from all of them, and boy, did they nail it. Just for my own eval, you're watching Wichita State play Nebraska in our last opportunity a month ago up there in Nebraska, and watching Annalie, I know where she was 2 years ago, and now I'm watching her out there holding her own against some of the best players in the country, a couple of future Olympians, no doubt, and she looks like she belongs, and it's just makes me happy, and she's all in. Well, that's I just named that. I threw her name out there, but Galligan has got leadership, and she's rangy now, and Kylie is playing defense at our level now. And Gabby's probably the most polished and complete, but it's going to be a battle. And we've got a killer walking in the door, Kansas kid coming in here pretty soon that's going to add to our mix also. So just feeling really good that we're going to – I feel like that group has got to be a top third collective of liberos in our conference. I feel like I can say that.
Middle Morgan Stout, tell the people about her spring.
Yeah, so I'm an analogy guy. So, if you had a tractor in your yard but it didn't run and you're shoveling and moving firewood or whatever and you're looking over there going, well, if I could get that going, this task would be a lot easier. So maybe you ought to invest in fixing up that old tractor. Because if you have that working for you, it'll be a lot better. Well, so when I say not working, I don't mean literally she can't run. But Morgan came to us as kind of a raw but talented volleyball player. Loses her junior year of high school to an ACL. Loses her senior year to COVID. And then loses her freshman year at Wichita State because when she got here, we've learned about the stress fracture in her foot that she probably had had for a long, long time based on the calcification, I'm told by the doctor. So we needed to get that right. So the raw kid that needed to train really was removed from volleyball for the better part of 3 years. So let's just start with that. But yet, like that tractor sitting out in the field, it's capable of so much. So when I say our philosophy was to get the M1 position going, we're talking about, literally, we're saying, we get Morgan Stout up to speed. We've got something here. And how can we help her with that? Well, we made most of our practice about that job description and helping her get there. And it made everybody else better also. But it was really, let's improve at that position, and hopefully a lot of that goes towards Morgan just getting better. She finished with she had a nice season last year, but I know we could do more. I know we can get more. The previous year she was on a jump count. She was only getting so many jumps a day, knock on wood, but we were able to practice every day with Morgan this spring. Just what a difference. So if things go right and her skill and volleyball IQ catch up to her talent, well, you're talking about the sky's the limit, as I said sooner. So, I don't know if the way I said it came across kind of weird, but, I mean, we thought that old tractor needed a tune-up. Let's go fix her up and get reap the benefits of what it can do for us. And she was great wire to wire.
So you will enter the off season with assistant coaches Brian Hossfeld, Katie Zimmerman. They're back for their second season, second go around. How does that help? How does that change things? Having some continuity in that spot.
Yeah, and comfort for them. I mean, I just, they talk more when you walk away. When assistants show up and you want to see them working, don't be surprised if you get more out of them if you just walk away than they assume the role. So, you know, I'm smart enough to trust what Brian and Katie can do. So, hey, you got this group over there. Go knock yourself out. And, you know, I didn't invent that. And I used to be in their role. So, you know, I figured that was the best way for our players to get to know them and the best way for them to feel comfortable about offering up all the gifts they have for us. So, you know, I tried to put them in a position where they had a group in front of them each day, and they could, you know, the kids could learn them, and they could learn the athletes, learn from each other and get to know each other. And hopefully we can have a seamless transition into the season. And, you know, the coaches in our league, you know, point to us finishing better than people thought. I mean, the Shockers in the volleyball circles had a really nice year. And we had lost Sophia for a portion of that. We had lost Lily Lickway for a portion of that. So pretty excited about it. And also an entire new staff. We're great. We are a very functional group. We spend a lot of time together. We enjoy each other a lot. We have a lot to talk about on and off the court. And you know what? I have to say this. If anybody's had their ear to the tracks, you'll know that the NCAA just took away what's called volunteer coaches throughout. Because, you know, different programs had a number of people, you know, in the gym or on the track or on the football field. Well, there's been so many changes at the NCAA level, at the Division I level. And so now that the volunteer coaches are going away, schools with resources want to make that a paid position. So volleyball now has a fourth assistant. And I'm old enough to tell you, but when volleyball just had one, you had a head coach and an assistant. There were only two people who could recruit. There were only two people who could train. Then we added a second assistant. Now you could have head coach and two assistants, so three people could coach and train. Three people can go out and recruit. But it didn't mean everybody was on board at the time. So the volunteers would fill those roles. They just wouldn't get paid. They would just be there in the gym training. So anyhow, fast forward to now, starting July 1st, volleyball will now add the fourth assistant. Wichita State will not have a paid position there. But what you can do is take your director of ops and have them be one of the coaches. So that's exactly what we're going to do. So super excited to announce that on July 1st, Ashley Holton will be now an assistant coach by title in the gym training and recruiting. Dream come true for her. And so happy that I get to be here, you know, for her first crack at this, because she's certainly paid her dues all along the way. She's done everything right. Every place she's been, everybody has adored and appreciated what she's brought to their programs. And, you know, we'll just absorb amongst our staff all those director of op jobs anyways, just like we used. Heck, it used to just be me and Shannon doing all the jobs. So no big deal. But I'm really excited that Ashley gets to have that opportunity. And that's where we'll be as we set sail in August.
Okay. Chris, thanks very much for your time. We appreciate it.
Anytime, Paul.
Thank you for listening to the Roundhouse Podcast, courtesy of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. We encourage you to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You can find more Roundhouse content at GoShockers.com.
It's over. It is over. Ladies and gentlemen, say it slowly and savor it. Wichita State is going to the Final Four for the first time in 48 years.
Unbelievable. What a scene, folks. The Shocker fans are just going crazy in the stands.
Just maybe the greatest win in the history of Wichita State basketball.